10, I have the hearing procedure statement to begin. This is the time and place for hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board North Coast Region to consider the proposed basin plan amendment to establish exception criteria to the point source waste discharge prohibitions by revising the action plan for stormwater discharges, adding a new action plan for low threat discharges amendment to the basin plan, also referred to as the low threat discharge amendment and associated supplemental environmental document. This item has been properly noticed. The sheet explaining the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand? Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter? We'll begin with staff presentation, Holly Lundborg.
Good morning, board. Can you hear me? Good morning, board and public. My name is Holly Lundborg. I'm the lead staff in your basin planning unit. I'm here today to present to you. Could we go back one? Just.
You're the remote right there.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. I'm here today to present to you for your consideration for approval or consideration is the proposal to amend the North Coast Basin Plan by establishing exception criteria to the point source waste discharge prohibitions that are currently in our basin plan. I'm going to be referring to this throughout the presentation as the low threat amendment or the proposed amendment for shorthand because of that long title. Let me just do a couple of logistics first before we get started. I want to compliment your staff. This was definitely a team effort led in large part by Lauren Clyde, who could not be here today, but was instrumental in keeping us going forward and not getting sidetracked and keeping meetings scheduled and keeping the team really functioning. So kudos to Lauren. Also to your staff from the core regulatory unit, John Short, Mona Doherty, who you heard from yesterday, and Kathleen Goodwin, who you're going to hear from this afternoon, were instrumental in making sure that this basin plan amendment was consistent with what direction that they have received from you and from management in terms of core regulatory program. And the managers here have been very helpful in keeping us focused and going on this project. So I want to say this was really a team effort, and the team needs to be congratulated, I think, on at least bringing such a thoughtful package to you for your consideration. You have a fairly substantial board package in front of you. I'll just walk through it briefly so that I can sort of enter it into the record and explain to you how it's been structured. First, you'll see a green executive officer summary report, which is just basically three pages of boiling down this long process to help you in your determination. Attached to that in a goldenrod color is the public notice formally announcing this today. This was noticed in the newspapers and was published put on our website. You will see a canary yellow colored document titled Resolution R1-2009-0004, which is the proposed resolution for your consideration adopting this proposed amendment. Attached to this resolution, and it's a little confusing, and for that I apologize, but we did the best we could, you're going to see four attachments. One is gray, and that is, there's actually two grays. Those are the clean version of the proposed action plans. The white version is the strikeout and underlined version. It's so for the first one, the low threat action plan, it's a brand new action plan, so it was fairly easy to document the changes that we've made since we released it to the public and in response to public comment. The second page, the strikeout and underline page, shows, in fact, for the low-threat discharge amendment, those changes that we made in response to our public comment period. The second gray page is the clean version of the revisions to the existing stormwater action plan. And because it's an existing action plan, the first time we noticed it, we did strikeout and underline. And then to make it clear to you what the revisions were that came around the second time was a little unclear. So we gave you a strikeout and underlined version, but we provided you this clean copy so that you could hopefully read through to get the intent of where we really, what we really intended to happen. Exhibit B of the EOSR is the, our staff report dated July 1st, 2009. It's also a yellow color. This is was revised from our November staff report, again, in response to public comment and internal staff deliberations. We provided it in a strikeout underline form so that you could see, again, where, easily where the changes were. When we publish this on the web, if there are any more changes, we'll add those. Otherwise, we'll give it a fresh date, correct, accept all those strikeout and underlines, and put a clean version up when we're finally done with our deliberations. The last handout, the last piece of your document is a salmon-colored Exhibit C. It's the response to comments that we received. It's about 76 pages in length. We received 78 letters of comment and a number of summary comments were summarized from those. In fact, we summarized 135 comments out of the 78 letters. Finally, this was available on the handout table as well, is an errata sheet that we found, that we've produced, that we found some typographical errors in the response to comments, so we've provided that to you as well for your convenience. And last but not least, I noticed just this morning, unfortunately, that the wrong table of contents had been printed. It was the old one. So there's a fresh table of contents that you guys have with the correct page numbers so that if I call out a page for you, you'll be able to find out where it is. So that's kind of where the handouts are. I would like to formally put our administrative record file into the record. This is currently how it is looking. It's luckily all been PDF'd, and this, we get to submit it to the state board now on DVD, which is going to save us a lot of paper. So hence, this is why it looks like this. So that's sort of the logistics, sort of the board package. Then I think most of the public here is familiar with our process, but I would ask if anyone is interested in testifying to the board today at the close of my comments, would you please fill out a speaker card and make sure that Jean has that so that she can give those to the board chairman to call when the time comes. Today what I intend to do is basically, for those of you that came to our January 2009 workshop, you're going to hear basically the same presentation at the beginning. It's going to be a brief overview of the scope of the Basin Plan Amendment, how we structured the two Basin Plan Amendments. I'm going to give you a very brief overview of the comments that we received. It's going to be a summary of the summary comments. All of the comment letters are posted on our webpage and are available for the public and the board's review. And finally, we're going to turn it over to the board and the public for public comment and the board's deliberation. So the scope of the Basin Plan Amendment, the proposed exception criteria applies to point source waste discharge prohibition. I'm sorry, the proposed exception criteria applies if discharge meets all of the following conditions. It is to surface waters in the North Coast region. It is from a permitted point source. It is covered by a board permit, and it is considered a low threat to water quality. Here is the definition of low threat discharge as we are using it in our proposed Basin Plan Amendment. The discharge must meet all applicable water quality objectives. It cannot cause an adverse effect to beneficial uses or cause a nuisance. And the volume, discharge rate, and pollutant load of the discharge must be minimized. So this is important to keep in mind when I talk about later on about low threat discharge. You need to keep in mind that all of these criteria need to be met in order for it to be a low threat discharge. If one of these is not complied with, then by definition it will no longer be considered a low threat discharge. Staff and the board has long identified the need to amend the basin plan because these sorts of discharge, low-threat discharge that we're going to be describing in more detail in a minute, are currently occurring across the region. There's often no alternative to the discharge, and the staff recognizes that many of these discharges are integral to the community health, public health, and safety. It's also important that we address this issue because our current point source waste discharge prohibitions are in conflict with existing statewide permits and policies, particularly the State Water Board recycle policy, which was recently adopted by the board and approved by OAL, as well as a number of the statewide general permits that are available to permittees. The existing point source prohibitions, as many of you know, our region is unique in our application of this sort of prohibition. Point sources, the definition of point source has evolved over the intervening 30 years, and what we have now are these prohibitions that are in place, the year-round prohibition for point source discharge in the Klamath River Basin and for all of our coastal streams, and seasonal discharge prohibition for the Mad, Eel, and Russian River systems. These include the dry weather discharge prohibition as well as the 1% flow. The proposed framework for the Basin Plan Amendment is structured in two pieces. The first, and possibly, well, I think I can say, actually probably the most contentious based on the comments that we received, are the revisions to the existing Stormwater Action Plan. These would include discharges from a permitted stormwater drainage collection system. So it's crucial to remember that the Stormwater Action Plan only applies when we are issuing a stormwater permit required under federal law, NPDES permits. We're going to implement through the board permits, either through our individual MS4 type permits, through a State Board Caltrans permit, through the State Board General Construction permit. So again, Stormwater Action Plan is going to relate to discharges into and out of permitted municipal stormwater collection systems. The new action plan that we were proposing will address all the other sources of low-threat discharge that occur in the region currently, such as well development, crawl space dewatering, swimming pool discharge after it's been treated. These don't go into a permitted stormwater system, but they do make their way through one measure or another into waters of the state. These will only include intentional discharges. No incidental discharges will be permitted under the Low Threat Action Plan. These two are going to be implemented through a water board permit. In fact, Kathy Goodwin of your staff is going to bring to you the proposed low threat permit this afternoon after your consideration of this item. To reiterate, the proposed stormwater action plan applies to point source discharges from municipal and industrial stormwater drainage systems. They must be in compliance with water quality objectives, and they need to be covered by a board-issued permit. Some of the examples of the stormwater action plan, some of the types of discharge associated with this action plan would include, obviously, stormwater runoff if it occurs during the discharge prohibition system, incidental runoff from irrigation systems, either potable or incidental, recycled. And as I've already said, it's the main concern with this proposal is about recycled water. Emergency releases from drinking water supplies, fire hydrant testing and flushing. This is a select example. The proposed stormwater action plan would include two categories of discharge: those that are intentional, that are planned, like crawl space dewatering. Again, they cannot cause adverse effects to beneficial uses. They have to be approved in the management plan, and they have to be included in the management plan that will come to your staff for approval. So if anyone wants some type of intentional low threat exception, they need to have a BMP program, a best management practice program in place that would directly address that type of intentional runoff. The converse of that is the incidental runoff. This we've described in detail so that it's clear that incidental runoff cannot be the result of poor maintenance or poor infrastructure design. There can't be any feasible alternative that you could have implemented to prevent that incidental runoff. And again, the approved management plan must call out the best management practices that will be implemented to protect water quality from incidental low-threat discharges. The proposed low-threat action plan applies to all other intentional discharges in the North Coast region. As I said, like well development, swimming pool drainage, those things that don't have benefit of being put into a already regulated municipal facility. Again, they must be in compliance with water quality objectives and be enrolled under a board permit. Here's some select examples of discharges that we would envision being associated with this kind of permit: construction, dewatering, maintenance of potable water supplies, dredge spoils, dewatering. There's six criteria that would the discharger, the permittee enrollant, would need to ensure staff they were meeting in order to be eligible for this permit. First and foremost, does not affect beneficial uses or cause a condition of nuisance, complies with all water quality objectives, the best practical treatment is implemented, no feasible discharge to the alternative exists. It's one of the things staff's really going to look at, because one of the things I think you'll hear from Kathy Goodwin later today is often once staff and the discharger gets in coordination with each other, they can find an alternative to the discharge. Not always, but often. That the increment of wastewater remaining after implementation of all reasonable, that the increment of wastewater is limited to that which you can't prevent, and again, are regulated by a permit. So now that's the basic overview of what the permit is. I realize it was very quick, but I think most folks have had some time to really spend thinking about it. So what I'd like to spend some time doing now is talking about the comments that we've received. And as I said earlier, the primary comment, the driver, if you will, of our comments seems to be related to this first bullet, incidental runoff. But before I start with that, I would like to just make it, let's see if I sort of misplace my comments here. Well, I'll just, we received a number of comments of general support. I need to make that clear. Maybe 8 or 9 of our 78 comment letters offered support of the entire proposal or of a large portion of it. We also received a fair number of letters in opposition to the proposal, almost all of them related to incidental runoff. Excuse me while I seem to have misplaced one of my pieces of paper, but I will. One of the concerns raised over and over again was how staff would know whether the requirements of the storm water action plan were met and whether the runoff was incidental or caused by nuisance. We feel strongly that a clear and concise BMP program as submitted, developed by the permit enrollant, reviewed by your staff, and approved by your staff will aid in knowing whether the stormwater action plan, the elements of that have been complied with. It is also staff's contention that it's fairly easy to determine whether, and thank you, whether the incidental runoff was intentional or caused by negligence. Second bullet refers to how the management plan for the MS4 works with the management plan needed for the low threat discharge exception. Our feeling is that some of the larger permits that may be, some of the larger projects that may come in may well opt, as I said earlier, to discharge into an already permitted facility like the MS4 permit, in which case it would be up to staff to determine whether an additional permit would be needed or simply the discharger coordinating with the permit holder and their application of their requirements would be appropriate. Let's see this quick, right? Nope. We received a number of comments relative to water quality objectives, and I need to make it clear this is a summary of comments. All of the comments were read and considered and summarized. What we've tried to do is sort of lump them into large categories just to aid in the discussion today. We received comments regarding compliance with our water quality objectives, whether it should basically be at the point of discharge or in the receiving water. Staff feels strongly that in order for us to assure that it's low threat and to be able to ensure compliance with both of these action plans, that the water quality objectives need to be applied at the point of discharge, except for those water quality objectives that were framed as receiving water limitations, such as oil and grease, settleable materials, sediment, turbidity. So staff has, you'll see when you, as you have read through your responses to comments, that staff has elected to maintain that the point of discharge is the best place for us to assure that water quality objectives are being met. We received a lot of comments also regarding what we are referring to as chemicals of emerging constituents, concern. These are personal care products, pharmaceuticals, things that end up in the wastewater and water system from human usages. We are deferring to the Scientific Advisory Committee that was empowered by the State Water Board's recycled water policy. They're actively working on determining the best available science to formulate recommendations for you, the board, to consider in your adoption of new or revised permits that will address these issues as more information is available. There was also concern expressed related to the 1% prohibition and how it applies. Staff needs to make it clear that the 1% prohibition, as it applies now, does not apply during the summer period. However, staff feels that the requirements to meet the exception criteria for the point source prohibitions are the same, basically the same as those that you would need to get an exception for the 1% flow restriction. So we feel that they are one and the same, that the requirements to meet one are basically subsumed by meeting the requirements of the other. Many comments came in on the adequacy of our CEQA. One comment was related to the analysis, was the assertion that the analysis might not be adequate, considering that the best management, how the beneficial uses would be protected, i.e. what the best management practice program would be, was not available. But as we have, one, clarified in the stormwater action plan and in the low threat action plan and in our response to comments, that we have made sure that there's a public process available for the public to be engaged in commenting and reviewing and commenting on all the best management practice programs that are going to be put in place to ensure that this is, in fact, going to be the case. It's also important to remember that these are all low-threat discharges. It's up to the permit holder to assure us, the board, and the public that they are meeting water quality objectives and not causing an adverse condition to the beneficial uses or a nuisance. Assertion that the cumulative impact analysis is inadequate because it doesn't consider the increased use of recycled water. As we've commented in our response to comments, the State Board has basically already cleared this hurdle for you, or barrier if you were, for irrigated lands when they adopted their statewide recycled water policy and are working on the draft irrigation policy permit as well. The State Board policy not only clears the way for you, it actually mandates that you approve permits that use, that allow the use of this kind of water if specific requirements are met. And it's also important to remind folks that these discharges are currently occurring across the region now, and they have been for quite some time. This program, staff's intent that when this program is put in place, there will be a regulatory program that's designed to minimize the occurrence of these discharges over the region over the relatively short period by encouraging in both permits a prevention first and a minimization second strategy. Have a BMP program in place with some oversight that's developed by the dischargers with their site-specific information at hand, reviewed by your staff, and implemented, monitored, and reported back by the discharger so that you, we, and the public all have a sense of the rigor that this program is that we've put in place. We've received a number of comments that we're basically lumping in the general category. One was the reevaluation of this process, this program, 2 years after implementation. I can remind the board and the public that we have a three-year triennial review process that comes up. It will be up again in 2010. We'll have a chance to look at it then. We also would, I think, be in a position to provide more frequent updates to the board at your direction on how well, how vigorous the program is being implemented across the region. A number of concerns were raised about anti-degradation. Again, low threat. We are basing this program on the concept that all discharge has to meet applicable water quality objectives, that it not create a nuisance, that beneficial uses be protected, and that discharges across the region be decreased from the baseline that they are now. A concern was stated about folks with immune deficiencies having access to areas where irrigated water with recycled water has been used. We would point out that both the state recycled water policy and the draft irrigated permit have criteria requirements put in place to protect public health, and that both and Title 22 of California law also has very strict requirements on this. Last bullet, we were requested to further define how impacts from the potential discharge will present only a low threat and disclose the evidence on which this determination is based. Again, this is a reiteration of what I've been saying throughout this presentation, is to qualify for a low threat discharge, you have to comply with water quality objectives, not cause adverse conditions of nuisance, protect beneficial uses. These discharges tend to be short-term in nature or periodic. And again, importantly, the rate, pollutant load, and volume of the discharge must be prevented to the maximum extent practical and minimized the remainder. Again, the same basic response to the anti-deg. We feel strongly that this program, once we put it in place and we get the outreach and education done by both the MS4 holders and your staff, that we will see a decrease in this kind of discharge in the future, and if not, an out-and-out avoidance of the discharge, that a rigorous BMP program would be put in place to ensure that water quality is protected. The last bullet was been expressed a couple of times by how staff will implement this program. I think Kathy Goodwin will be able to tell you a little more about that later this afternoon when she talks to you about her permit. But I can tell you that the burden of this in terms of implementation falls to the person who's requesting the exception. They need to seek enrollment. They need to develop the BMP program. They need to engage with staff. They need to implement the BMP program. They'll need to monitor as they are required and as necessary, and they'll need to report. Staff will be in a position to enroll the permit. We envision that it will be more time-consuming at the beginning until we've all engaged in back and forth a bit with this, but that we will see a decreasing trend in our staff input, our staff resources being expended. Kathy Goodwin, I know, has some more information on that she'll present to you this afternoon. So that's a brief summary of the many, many pages of thoughtful public comment we received. So now what I am going to do is basically present new information to you, which are the changes in the two proposed action plans that are up for your consideration today. The low threat action plan, that second bullet, I apologize, is incorrect. That belongs on the next slide. Basically, all we did on the low-threat action plan was substitute the word surface for receiving, because this is a, it's related to surface water prohibitions, not groundwater. So we will make those revisions to the low-threat action plan at your direction. More changes to the stormwater action plan. We clarified the elements of a stormwater action plan. They'd been presented in a paragraph form. We broke them out into bullets, so they're a little easier to spell out the individual elements of. We clarified what sorts of incidental runoff, incidental low-threat non-stormwater discharge we were referring to, provided some examples. We clarified some language about MS4 compliance at the City of Santa Rosa's request. And the last bullet is probably the most important. We added clarifying language that emergency firefighting flows were exempt from the point source prohibitions. So those are the basic changes to the action plan that you will see reflected in your latest version. So with that, I would ask if you have any questions for me.
Board member questions?
Thank you.
Holly, I have one in terms of the distinction for year-round versus the areas with a seasonal discharge prohibition. How do these changes affect those two different types of operations? Do they have any impact different in one than the other?
Well, currently, in the Klamath River Basin and in our coastal streams, there's an out-and-out prohibition of any type of point source discharge. So if it's going to waters of the state from a conveyance system, from a well that somebody's developing in a coastal stream or in the Klamath Basin, year-round they're prevented from doing it. This action plan would open up, under the low-threat action plan, would open up the ability for those folks to come to us and get a permit to allow that discharge.
Okay. All right. We have several speakers. We'll go to those. Jennifer Burke, City of Santa Rosa, followed by Yagiwan Grengni from Caltrans.
Good morning, Chairman Anderson and members of the board. My name is Jennifer Burke, and I'm the Senior Water Resources Planner for the City of Santa Rosa, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to comment on the proposed Basin Plan Amendment. Until recently, state and regional policy and regulations discouraged urban landscape irrigation using recycled water by not recognizing and permitting incidental runoff, which is an unavoidable consequence of all irrigation systems. With the State Water Resource Control Board approval of both the state's water recycling policy and the recycled water landscape irrigation general permit earlier this year, the state board has done its part to address this obstacle. Your proposed revisions to the existing stormwater action plan would bring regional policy into alignment with state policy and would eliminate obstacles that have prevented the City of Santa Rosa from moving ahead with construction of our urban reuse project. The City of Santa Rosa has an aggressive water conservation program conserving over 4,100 acre feet per year, and urban reuse is one more piece of that conservation program. And this basin plan amendment would allow the city to substantially offset an additional 3,000 acre feet per year of potable demand. Conservation alone won't meet our water supply needs. Incidental runoff is an unavoidable consequence of irrigation as recognized by the State Water Resources Control Board and your staff, and the BMPs that would be required by the Basin Plan Amendment will lead to a net reduction of incidental runoff of irrigation from all sources and thus increase protection of beneficial uses. The city has proposed a particular set of aggressive BMPs, best management practices, that we have reviewed with the regional board staff, and their initial response was that these would be consistent with the standard that would be established with the proposed basin plan amendment. Our BMPs include a number of ordinances, policies, and guidelines that are in place requiring conservation and efficient use of water to prevent the waste of our valuable water resources. These policy and guidelines, along with state requirements for pipe separation, markings, taggings, advisory signs, and labels, site supervisor designation, and annual self-inspections, make up our BMPs for recycled water use. An irrigation site that is properly designed, operated, and maintained per the City of Santa Rosa requirements will prevent runoff and minimize overspray and incidental runoff. The city has an adopted water-efficient landscape policy that established the standards for landscape and irrigation design and installation for all development to ensure efficient water use and prevention of runoff. In addition, all sites must submit irrigation and planting plans to the city, which must be reviewed and approved by the city to ensure they conform to the requirements of the policies. After the landscape has been installed, it must be inspected by the city to make sure it meets the requirements. For operation and maintenance, recycled water sites will be required to be operated per the city's recycled water users guide and must designate a site supervisor who's responsible for recycled water use on site. The city also has an adopted water waste ordinance that applies to potable and recycled water, which prohibits water use that results in runoff and prohibits breaks or leaks in the water delivery system. The city has the authority to terminate service for violation of that ordinance. All of these policies and programs are in place to eliminate and prevent runoff. Others today may tell you that the Basin Plan Amendment as proposed would permit water quality degradation during the discharge prohibition season. We strongly disagree. We agree with your staff that the proposed Basin Plan Amendment will result in reduction of runoff such that only truly incidental runoff occurs during this sensitive time of year. The city commented on the draft Basin Plan Amendment and is pleased that our comments have been substantially addressed. We thank you and your staff for recognizing and addressing these issues and request that you adopt the Basin Plan Amendment as proposed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? I'd try the name again, but better you do it than I.
Oh, okay. Honorable Chair and Board Members, my name is Jack Jeevan Garibal, and I am representing California Department of Transportation Headquarters Division of Environmental Analysis. Today, I want to address the proposed amendment for low threat discharges. We submitted our comments, written comments on January 29, 2009, expressing our concerns regarding various issues in the amendment. And the Water Board posted a response to the comments on July 1, 2009. I understand that today is the adoption hearing, and it does not provide the opportunity to provide more written comments. We believe that we have certain issues which need to be resolved. In the event Water Board does not adopt the amendment today, Caltrans requests that the written comment period be extended. If this is not possible, we would like to request a meeting with the Water Board to explain some of our unique linear MS4 situations in relation to the revised action plan and related impacts. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with the Water Board.
All right. So I gather you're asking for an extension. What's your time frame?
Right.
I mean, is that a short time frame, or are you?
The response to the comments was posted only very recently, and we reviewed the response to the comments, and we have some additional comments, and we think that we should get some more time.
Okay.
To provide more written comments.
And, well, we'll have staff respond after the public comments to that.
Thank you.
Next speaker, Frank Egger, followed by Virginia Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Frank Egger, 13 Meadow Way, Fairfax, representing the North Coast Rivers Alliance. California has now lost its salmon season, the second in a row. Everyone decries what has happened as salmon species head towards extinction. Two state agencies have allowed this to happen, the California Department of Fish and Game and the California Water Quality Control Board. Staff comments, they talk about discharges are occurring. They say it's a low threat. We talk about regulated municipal facility. Go to the October 2008 Ninth Circuit Court decision and the recent National Marine Fisheries Service biological opinions. You can view them at the Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides website. They put in constant updates. They are reviewing 34 pesticides that enter salmon waters and kill salmon. The state of California is ignoring this Ninth Circuit Court decision. A common disinfectant used by our public water districts is chloramine. We know chloramine kills salmon, whether it's discharged accidentally or through the sewer treatment plants. With improvements in chemical and analytical technology, major pollutants can now be well documented in our river, water, and sediment. Heavy metals, particularly mercury, lead, cadmium, chromium, dioxins, dibenzofurans, PCBs, polyaromic hydrocarbons, PAHs, PBDEs, toxic pharmaceuticals, particularly hormone disruptors, personal care products, chemicals, pesticides, fertilizer nitrates, and nitrates, solvents, detergents, plasticizers, plastic monomers, and many chemical breakdown molecules that are often more toxic than the original compound are being run through our sewer treatment systems. Drug-resistant, highly virulent, superbug, microorganisms are produced in the mix that is coming from residents, hospitals, clinics, laboratories, and biotechnology. These are antibiotic-resistant pathogens and DNA-coded for antibiotic resistance that have been contributing to the spread and virulence of these superbugs to communities. Healthcare providers are well aware of the increasing incidence of MSRA and other new antibiotic-resistant devastating infections. The genetic material is exchanged and antibiotic chlorine resistance occurs in the mix of these sewer plants. Microorganism pathogenicity, antibiotic resistance, and virulence is potentiated. Testing for major categories, carcinogens, mutagens, reproductive hazards, CMRs, are just now being adequately checked in Europe and under the REACH program to screen out the worst chemicals. Excuse me. Recent scientific discoveries by Ted Colburn and other chemical hormone disruptor researchers have pushed the EPA into finally considering a chemical hormone disruptor screening program that will begin over the next 10 years. These hormone disrupting effects occur when water exposures and ultra-dilute concentrations below parts per trillion, particularly putting embryos, fetuses, newborns, infants, and young children at development risk. I ask you to strengthen, not weaken, our discharge requirements. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. Do you have that written in form that you can leave with us?
I will prepare it and get it delivered to you within the next day or two. Is that okay?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. Virginia Porter, followed by Brenda Edelman.
Good morning, Chairman Anderson and members of the Regional Board. I'm Virginia Porter, and I'm here today representing the Russian River Watershed Association. Thank you for the time to speak today. And thank you also for the multi-year process that you've involved all of us in that have brought us to the point where you're able to consider this Basin Plan Amendment today. It's been open and collaborative, and we really appreciate the opportunity to have been able to participate. Our association represents 9 public agencies in the Russian River watershed in Sonoma and Mendocino counties. These agencies have come together to collaboratively develop programs for clean water and watershed enhancement. Our member agencies include the County of Sonoma, Sonoma County Water Agency, the cities of Ukiah, Cloverdale, Cotati, Healdsburg, Rohnert Park, Santa Rosa, and the town of Windsor. These agencies manage potable water, stormwater, recycled water, and wastewater collection and treatment, and this Basin Plan Amendment has a direct effect on these 9 agencies. I'm here today to express Russian River Watershed Association's support for this item. All 9 agencies have come together and have ask that this be read to you today and that you understand that we are all completely behind the Basin Plan Amendment that you're considering today. Adoption of the amendment has benefit to our region in a number of ways. You've heard some of them from your staff. You're hearing some of them from the affected agencies. There's just a couple that I want to mention or particularly highlight. You've heard from the staff about the alignment that is developed between the state policy and the regional policies by adoption of this amendment. That has actual practical implications for those agencies that are trying to implement the details, the BMPs, those things that will prevent and minimize any of these potential discharges. So we have opportunities for sharing of training programs, planning documents, those kinds of things. So we appreciate the efficiencies that we gain through that alignment. Secondly, there is this net benefit to those affected waters because the amendment establishes essentially a rigorous framework which will allow sort of a prescribed mechanism for allowing these discharges. And this is a net effect compared to the status quo. And so we see that as, from a perspective of an association invested in this watershed, we see that as a net effect in terms of watershed enhancement, and thank you for that. And lastly, and this had been alluded to by the City of Santa Rosa earlier, there had been some really unintentional provisions that had impeded the development of recycled water as a valuable water supply resource for our region. You know well that this is a big solution in terms of statewide water supply solution as well as a regional water supply solution is the development of recycled water as part of the total suite of supplies that urban agencies and agriculture are using. And so we have really a change, and it really will take away some roadblocks that have allowed the development of recycled water in the urban area. I think this is something that's all the more we're all the more aware of with the low water conditions on the north coast in the region as well as throughout the state. So I ask that you, on behalf of the RRWA and all of our member agencies, we recommend that the board adopt the resolution to adopt this basin plan amendment. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Brenda Edelman, followed by Donna Gallagher.
Brenda Edelman, I just want to start by calling your attention to a few pictures I brought. I don't necessarily want to leave them here. And also, your staff is going to pass out the article that I asked to have distributed yesterday. I would also like to request that all my comments from yesterday be entered into the record for this item as well. That first picture is actually the Laguna at Stony Point Road. It's totally filled in with Ludwigia. The second picture is some gross-looking algae growing in the river in the Rio Nido area. And the third picture shows one of the many, many outcroppings of Ludwigia growing in the lower river. I'm really supportive of most of this amendment, and that my focus has been on the incidental runoff portion of it. The comment was made. I also submitted my comments in writing along with a few other documents. The comment keeps getting made that we have to irrigate more to offset water supplies, and I just want to call attention to the fact that the city currently irrigates almost 2 billion gallons a year. I believe it may be more than that. Anyway, my prepared comments are as follows. This proposed basin plan amendment provides exceptions to the summer discharge prohibition that has been in effect for many years. The original purpose of the prohibition was to protect human health during the summer recreation season when there is high recreational use of the Russian River. We strongly believe that that is still necessary. In recognition of current water shortages and the need to greatly stretch those resources, the state adopted a water recycling policy early this year. It was my reading that the water recycling policy does not require wastewater reuse to offset potable supplies. It facilitates it. And as I mentioned, even if I'm wrong about my interpretation, nevertheless, the city is already recycling vast amounts of wastewater. Because of their recognition of the potential hazards from unregulated chemicals, the state has set up a committee of experts to study the constituents of emerging concern and make recommendations as to monitoring and potential future regulation of these chemicals. This was an integral part of the state policy, and findings from the group should come forth within about a year. We are wondering why you cannot hold off approval until that report becomes available. We don't understand the urgency of at least the incidental runoff portion of this. The City of Santa Rosa has been pushing this Basin Plan Amendment for several years. City Council Resolution Number 27002 approved on December 18, 2007, just days after a very similar BPU resolution was passed, states at the end, "The Council hereby states that construction of the Santa Rosa Urban Reuse Project Phase 1 West shall not proceed until the North Coast Regional Board has amended its basin plan so that incidental runoff from urban reuse is no longer considered a violation of the seasonal discharge prohibition," unquote. The City of Santa Rosa is claiming that they need this amendment to assure compliance with their permit in case a broken sprinkler head causes wastewater to enter the waterways illegally during the prohibition period. Also, the amendment has been further expanded at their request to also allow spray from sprinklers when determined to be accidental. The reclamation permit states that direct or windblown spray, mist, or runoff from irrigation areas shall not enter dwellings, designated outdoor eating areas, or food handling facilities. I'm just wondering how you control that if the wind is blowing when the sprays are running. I'm wondering if signs will be placed around the business parks informing people that lawns are being watered with recycled wastewater so they can avoid the spray. The city would be called on to develop BMPs that supposedly prevent spills from happening under most circumstances. Given that city offices have been seen to have irrigated wastewater ponding in front, and I submitted a picture for the record. I didn't have duplicates. It's a small picture of wastewater ponding in front of their administration building at the treatment plant. I go to a meeting there once a month, and every single time I see the same water there every morning. The city's claiming that they want to offset water supplies, yet they also claim that this year they have conserved over 30% of their water use. Last year, their ponds went dry, and also they discharged no wastewater into the Russian River during the winter, and I have to say I'm thrilled about that. I'm not being critical at all. They have 95 contractors for their wastewater, and just yesterday, Dave Smith said they did not have enough water for all their users. So where will the water come from to serve their new urban users? It just doesn't add up. This amendment has not considered current water circumstances. The flow of the lower river was down to 57 CFS yesterday. Soon there will be little recreation in the lower river. If there is no water, there won't be any wastewater either. So how can they save water when it's not there to begin with? Our Laguna and Russian River are severely impaired right now with nutrients, sediments, temperature. As I mentioned yesterday, temperatures in the lower river have been averaging in about the 22 to 25 degrees Celsius range. As flows go down, assimilation ability goes with it. Add wastewater runoff into the mix, and we could be talking disaster. You heard about concerns of West Nile virus from mosquitoes that are drawn to the invasive plants and very low flow. The cumulative effects of multiple irrigation runoff accidents can greatly exacerbate a very bad situation. West Nile virus kills people. This amendment does not give adequate consideration to the impaired status of the waterways. Looking at long-term, lower flows may be a permanent condition. While the Water Agency is concerned about losing some of their 75,000 acre-feet a year supply, the city has been pushing hard for a big expensive pipeline project that will assure 101,000 acre-feet a year for future growth. The biological opinion and the reconsideration of Decision 1610, which governs flows in the river, is expected to put a big dent in water supply. While Santa Rosa has accomplished a lot of good conservation already, there is far to go. People are being encouraged to exchange turf for drought-resistant plants, and many are doing that, and we totally support that. But if you also encourage irrigation, will you be asking people to put their turf back, especially if water supplies remain limited? The two programs demand different management approaches, and which will it be? And I vote for conservation over reclamation in the urban areas. Yesterday, Dave Smith said the city does apply wastewater at agronomic rates. He misrepresented what I said, which was I hadn't seen any evidence supporting the agronomic rates being used. Perhaps it exists. I don't see it. And I have to say, I think Rohnert Park is just totally overdoing their water irrigation. Someone else will speak to that. And in terms of these third-party agreements, I would like to know how the whole city of Rohnert Park and their irrigation program is going to be managed so they fit within the parameters of this basin plan amendment. Last year's annual reclamation report indicates that almost 500 million gallons was irrigated in Rohnert Park last year, with irrigation depth on one property going to almost 45 inches, and that's in a place with clay soils. So who will be responsible to oversee Rohnert Park irrigation? I've always believed that much of the impairment in the lagoon is the result of over-irrigation in Rohnert Park. If the city is in charge of the sub-regional system, aren't they responsible for over-irrigation by those cities? And I want to say that first picture is downstream of Rohnert Park's irrigation. I had also expressed concern about the use of wastewater for frost protection, which is in violation of the city's reclamation permit. Since there was only one reclamation enforcement action against the city since January of 2007, we assume that so far no action has been taken for a practice that may have been going on for years and may also be widespread. This is a real problem because we are being promised that BMPs will be enforced with third-party contractors through oversight by the city. Well, the city has 95 third-party contractors now, and some things are slipping through the cracks. The city plans to add 1 billion gallons a year of urban irrigation at a cost of $150 million, which can have major impacts on the already impaired lagoon and Russian River. We don't see how the BMPs will guarantee no spills, especially if they were inadequately monitored. And I just want to say, I think you have a terrific staff. I think they work very hard. But we all know the constraints the state is putting on this agency in terms of not having enough staff to do the job they need to do. We're asking you to hold off on approving the incidental runoff portion of this amendment. We support all the rest strongly. There's a lot at stake here, and we plead with you not to rush this decision. We also request that current irrigators demonstrate in some way that they are meeting agronomic rates, and also concerned about the Rohnert Park oversight. In the event you do approve this today, we ask that your staff notify us at least 1 week prior to the beginning of the 30-day review period for best management practices. It is stated that the executive officer can approve BMPs after 30 days if no one protests, and we want to go on record as wanting to be fully involved for the entire review period. We also request that you notify the 340 supporters who sent you letters of protest that they be informed as well. Thank you very much for your time here today. Are there any questions?
Pardon me. Donna Gallagher, followed by Jane Nielsen.
Hi, thank you. I'm Donna Gallagher. I live in Rohnert Park. There are a couple issues that, and thank you for having this hearing. There are a couple issues I'm concerned about. Recycled to tertiary treated water, potential bioaccumulation of the known toxins. I think Mr. Edgar did a good job of that. That'll make my talk a little bit shorter. Rohnert Park's amount of incidental runoff, and also I'm concerned about the pesticides and fertilizers carried in that the wineries use, and then you spray the tertiary treated water, and then that runoff is going into the streams. So first, according to the list here, Rohnert Park is responsible for approximately a third of the tertiary treated water irrigated from the Santa Rosa Subregional Reclamation System. I personally am here because I have seen many areas of overwatering in of city properties, of schools, of the golf courses. I mean, Rohnert Park uses a lot of tertiary treated water, but nobody realizes that the schools alone, the school system, the whole school district, twice a year sprays with Roundup on their lawn, and then they spray the tertiary treated water. And as Brenda said, some of that water is going into the deepest places in the entire region, and it's already a low basin plain. Well, so here's my question. Who is checking to see if Rohnert Park is complying with Santa Rosa's reclaim permit, where it says, and I quote, recycled water shall be applied in such a manner so as not to exceed vegetative demand or field capacity. It is clear we're overwatering, and I just want to make sure you understand in Rohnert Park, when you overwater, it goes into the drains, and then it goes quickly. The successive runoff quickly flows into storm drains that clearly say, do not dump. This drain flows to Copeland Creek, Heinbach Creek, etc. Okay, that's where it's going. So the second thing is, as a nutritionist, which is what I am, I am already painfully aware of the 116,000 known toxins in our air, water, and food. And I have toured that Laguna treatment plant and been sold the bill of goods that water is drinkable. Now, when I was on the city council in Rohnert Park, and we went on a tour, and I went with one other city council person, they asked us to drink it because it was drinkable. I didn't drink it. That other council person did, and I don't know where he is now. We can't find him. We cannot find him. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. There he goes. Anyway, you know, and I want to be the biggest pleader of, until we do reverse osmosis nanofiltration of that water when it exits that Laguna treatment plant, we should not be spraying it on places where children play. And I don't care about the golf course. I don't really care about golf course or golf playing people anyway. I'm just kidding. See if you're paying attention. anyways, so I can make mine short because two people made a very good point about the prescription drugs that are in the water and the estrogenic factors and things like that. And we don't know, as a scientist, we do not know, someone who's studied biology, the bioaccumulation of the stuff repeatedly being sprayed, in addition to the fluoride and the harsh metals and things that are in the pesticides and the fertilizers and that what we're using. We don't even know how that stuff's combining. But I kind of have an idea, and I do know you can point to the cancers. And in your presentation, you talked about immune systems being hampered. Well, I already know. I work with people come to me all the time with immune disorders. That's what I do for a living, is try to boost their immune system. Well, we already have that problem, and if you put this, keep putting this tertiary treated water out there, you will enhance the amount of cancer that happens in this community. I know that for a fact. I appreciate your time. And lastly, I just want to say, from my scientific perspective, instead of giving an exception for low threat, this should be considered a much higher threat. I urge you to not make this exception. It should be tightened, not loosened. Thank you.
Thank you. Jane Nielsen, followed by James Grossman.
My name is Jane Nielsen. I live on Burnside Road in near Sebastopol, and I'm representing myself. I have a PhD in geology, and I worked for 25 or more years at the USGS in Menlo Park, 25 years full-time. I am the main writer and second author of the book, The American West at Risk, Science, Myths, and Politics of Land Abuse and Recovery, published in 2008 by Oxford University Press. I am concerned about unintended consequences. My book is mostly about the unintended consequences of our past practices and even our current practices. And these unintended consequences are the reason we're here discussing permits and very complex processes for controlling the kinds of things that we do that have eliminated species, destroyed, maybe on the way to destroying commercial fisheries and food products that we need for health, recreating mosquito breeding zones and so forth. So, you know, my concern is what the unintended consequences might be from this process of establishing a permit process for what is called ahead of time incidental runoff from low-threat discharges, predefined as low-threat discharges, because, you know, it seems to me that there needs to be really teeth somewhere in order to determine that what is being permitted really meets all of these ideas, that it's really incidental, that it's really low threat, because cumulative impacts do build up. I'm especially concerned about the wastewater irrigation. I have reviewed the state standards for the use of wastewaters in irrigation. I did not find them rigorous or protective, especially in view of over-irrigation tendencies. You know, maybe the fact that everything, that all the water supplies are going to be more restricted is going to make everybody cut back on their irrigation. I know, you know, drip irrigation is becoming very common. I use drip irrigation in my extensive garden, and but every now and then, of course, there's a failure, and I get a fountain. My impression is that the state is only contemplating establishing panels to look at what happens with the treated wastewater as a result of pressure. This is post hoc. We should go ahead only after we've really looked at the issues. I did not see a suggestion that the panel should consist of people who really understand the fate of pollutants in the environment. I'm very concerned about that. You know, that isn't something, that's something you're leaning on, what I think is a really threadbare policy. I gather that this permit will ask for permittees to come up with their BMPs sort of as they apply for the permits. I don't see that there's a list of best management practices that they need to adhere to. I'm wondering about that. Is this going to be a two-year permit or project by project? What happens if people have a two-year permit and they just decide they're going to go ahead and discharge anything they want to, you know, a nearby creek? How does that get monitored? I don't see the word monitoring. I don't see that the basin plan, that the stormwater plan monitoring program, which I really think is a wonderful plan, is going to apply to this. I have, you know, another series of things that worry me. You know, how in assessing cumulative impacts are we going to know which program is creating the cumulative impact, especially when there's widespread irrigation with wastewater? Why allow the discharge of well development water carrying undoubtedly sediment to a creek? Why wouldn't a BMP require a holding pond, baffles, swales, other impoundments that would prevent them from going into sediment, into surface water? I'm thinking about, you know, some well development. You might have arsenic coming up in part of the development. It might be, you know, fairly high in some areas. There's quite a lot of arsenic in some of the aquifers in the county. Is there some way, you know, would an applicant have to submit some water quality statement before or after discharge? I just don't see where the oversight is going to come from. So that's my testimony today. Thank you for hearing it. I'm sorry I haven't commented before. I've sort of been busy in other areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. James Grossman, followed by Larry Hansen.
My name is Jim Gonsman. I live near Occidental. I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to address you this afternoon, this morning, and also thank you for the last 46 years or thereabouts, I think, of your work in the state. Much of what has been accomplished in terms of betterment of our water system is attributable directly to you people. I've only become interested in, or engaged in this discussion about wastewater, treated wastewater as irrigation water approximately the last 10 days. So I am at some disadvantage to some of the other speakers who are far more knowledgeable and experienced than I am. So please excuse any false impressions or misstatements that I make. Like everyone else, I generally applaud your efforts for the basin plan, but I am very concerned about this amendment that would allow these incidental discharges. One thing I'd like to say right away, and perhaps somebody could address this, the staff person who made the presentation to you said, and I believe this is correct, she said that discharges are beneficial to public health. I would like to know what those benefits are. The woman who spoke for the Russian River Association, I think, suggested that the incidental or allowing incidental discharges was going to facilitate their operations. In other words, the communications and the manner in which they work together, the various agencies that make up that group. But I did not hear from anybody how this was going to benefit the public. I guess the one thing that was said is that because these discharges are occurring today, making them acceptable or allowing them to happen as opposed to prohibiting them from happening as we currently do is somehow going to reduce them. And that might be true if there was adequate oversight and adequate monitoring by the state. But as Ms. Edelman pointed out, this agency, and just about every agency in the state, well, I will say every agency in the state, is extremely hampered by the budget crisis that exists today and apparently is going to exist forever. There seems to be no light at the end of the financial mess that the state is in. So without that oversight and without that monitoring by the state, and I don't trust these permit holders to monitor themselves. I just don't. I think that a government agency who represents the people needs to do that, and I don't see how you're going to be able to do that. I'm going to add one other element here. I agree with everything that the gentleman from Fairfax, Mr. Egger, said about the chemicals and the poisons and the pollutants that are in the wastewater as it leaves, in the treated wastewater as it leaves the treatment plant. I also agree with the comments that several people made about the additional chemicals, poisons, and pollutants that are picked up when the wastewater is applied to landscapes. It's a soup that's going to go into our water, perhaps in small quantities, but it's a step backwards, in my opinion, to allow this to happen when we currently prohibit it. The one thing that I would like to add too is that I think this amendment will facilitate the continued Victorian archaic practice called irrigated landscape. Whereby we bring exotic plants into this county, into this state, into this country, and then in order to maintain them, we need to apply to many of them at least copious amounts of water. It's a stupid practice that's unsustainable and will stop at some time. It will stop. It cannot go forward. It may stop in Sonoma County in the next several years, or the next 25 years, who knows? But it will not go on. And I look forward to the day when we can come to a meeting like this and start talking about best management practices to thoroughly clean wastewater, to remove all of the chemicals, and to put that fully treated wastewater back into the streams where it's needed, and back into the aquifers where we can pump it out again as fresh potable water. We just need to stop putting this water on landscapes. I'm not going to get into the agricultural aspects of that. That's a whole other topic, and I know you're not looking at that right now. But again, thank you very much for the opportunity to address you today.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Last speaker card I have is Larry Hansen.
So I support most of the proposal to amend the basin plan, but I don't support the incidental runoff. The words incidental, low threat, can be deceiving when recycled water can be used by innumerable users throughout the county. It seems to me this becomes an impossible scenario for monitoring the excess runoff, as was illustrated by previous speakers. It's like letting the horses out of the barn knowing you'll never be able to control them. The dangers of pharmaceutical agents and toxic chemicals are known to you. The Russian River and tributaries have the lowest flows during the summer, and recently, especially now, lower flows due to the biological opinion. Therefore, the impacts to the Russian River watershed have the greatest impact at this time. It's like hundreds of pinpricks in a toxic drum of toxic waste. The impacts are cumulative. How can you possibly monitor all of this? I understand that the regional board staff may not have known about the Kunde wastewater proposal ponds, which were in the front page of the PD the other week. If true, how can the water board monitor such a myriad of sources of recycled water that is being proposed? If you are depending on third-party actors such as Santa Rosa through BMPs, I wonder if this is a realistic approach. When I visited the Santa Rosa Planning Department asking about monitoring a new large development project within the city limits of Santa Rosa, they indicated they relied all the monitoring on you guys, the water board. So do you know if the Santa Rosa now has increased their staff and budget to do all of this? So the bottom line is I oppose this aspect of the plan only, and the other part, good luck, too. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. Have another card, Dave Smith, and anyone else?
Thank you, and good afternoon. Mr. Chairman, I'm Dave Smith, and I'm here representing the City of Santa Rosa. I wanted to respond to a couple of assertions made about water recycling and the city's system in particular that bear upon your decision about the Basin Plan Amendment today, and I will ignore many assertions that are not related to the Basin Plan Amendment you're considering. There was an assertion that runoff from recycled water irrigation and runoff in general is responsible for the loss of fish from the Russian River. And I want to point out that your staff and our experts also believe that the discharge, the runoff from irrigation projects is not a cause of extinction of fish in the watershed. It's been the loss of habitat primarily, and that this Basin Plan Amendment is going to reduce the amount of runoff from all irrigation sources in an urban environment that passes through the municipal storm system from reaching the river. There was an assertion that the compounds, unregulated compounds in recycled water are leading to adverse effects in the receiving water, and this may be true, and that's why the state has begun to address this issue, and the federal government has also. But I can tell you that the exposure to these compounds of humans or to humans is much less in a recycling environment than it is in a discharge, and this Basin Plan Amendment promotes recycling instead of discharge, and the city will increase water recycling as a result of this Basin Plan Amendment, And the water that it will use to increase recycling as a result of this basin plan amendment will come from the water that's applied to city-owned lands in an agricultural environment. So there was assertion made that we didn't have water to supply this project. That's not true. The city owns about a third of the agricultural lands are currently irrigated, so we have flexibility to bring water into the city instead of irrigating the city-owned lands. So we're not short of water from a standpoint of being able to supply the beginnings of an urban reuse system that this basin plan amendment will facilitate. There was an assertion made that the best management practices that would be consistent with this basin plan amendment would not be adequate to control runoff. And there was an assertion made, why can't baffles, why can't swales be used, why can't drought-tolerant plants be mandated. In fact, the city of Santa Rosa has BMPs that encourage the use of all those things. The BMPs apply to recycled water just like they apply to potable water. The city is not encouraging irresponsible use of recycled water. The water waste ordinance applies to recycled water just like it does to potable water that's being used in the city. I think I'll finish there and just take any questions if there are any.
We have board member questions. Thank you. All right. Anyone else? Then, given it's past 12 o'clock, it'd be the chair's intent to close off, come back at 1 o'clock, have a staff summation at that time, and take board action. So, unless I hear contrary view to that, I think that's, given the time of day and the state of having sat here since 8:30, it'd be well to take the break, come back again at 1 o'clock, and then we'll finish up item 10, take up item 11. Thank you.